Charity relies on catching the big fish. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Michael Bloomberg, tech pioneer, former New York mayor, and possible 2020 presidential candidate, is donating a record $1.8 billion to his alma mater, Johns Hopkins. It'll help the university admit students based on ability, not ability to pay, aid-blind admissions. A new report from the Institute for Policy Studies suggests Bloomberg's gift evokes a theme in charitable giving these days: big donors giving big money to big institutions. Marketplace's Renata Sego has more.
The nation's charities brought in more than $410 billion last year, an all-time high, according to the Institute for Policy Studies. Donations poured in from big donors for big things like medical centers,
higher education, arts and culture organizations.
Chuck Collins co-authored the Institute report, which found there are fewer families making charitable donations, but the ones who are wealthier than they used to be. And Collins says more of them are getting tax breaks by giving to private foundations.
And that money kind of gets warehoused and doesn't necessarily move in a timely way to active charities that are solving problems.
And when the money does go to an institution, it's a big one. Rick Cohen with the National Council of Nonprofits says that
just makes it that much more difficult for a lot of these small and mid-sized nonprofits that are on the front lines.
The report found donations from low and middle income households has been on the decline for the past decade. I'm Renata Sego for Marketplace.
Chinese President Xi Jinping is in the Philippines for the first state visit by a Chinese leader in over a decade. Trade deals will be signed. The BBC's Sharonjit Lael in Singapore has more.
Xi Jinping meeting his Filipino counterpart Rodrigo Duterte, really forging links with regional leaders at a time when relations between China and the U.S. remain tense. Billions of dollars worth of deals are expected to be signed as President Duterte's administration pretty much ignores U.S. warnings about accepting Chinese cash. And nevertheless, though, even before Xi's expected arrival, there were hundreds of protesters descending on the Chinese embassy in Manila, chanting that the Philippines is not for sale. And even as yet more deals are expected to be signed on this trip, investment pledges from China have yet to materialize from 2 years ago. Some $24 billion in investment pledges were made when Duterte visited Beijing in 2016. That's yet to come through. Few projects have actually gotten off the ground.
Sharonjit Lael, after yesterday's 3% drop for the NASDAQ composite, that technology-focused stock index is now down for the month. Apple fell 4% yesterday. The company's not confirming this, but the Wall Street Journal had reported that Apple was cutting orders for smartphone parts, suggesting the bloom could be off the iPhone rose. Apple stock is down 19% from a recent high, putting it more than a correction and just short of a bear. NASDAQ futures today are down 1.1%. The Dow future down 0.6%.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
We've been calling our coverage 10 years after the great financial crisis, divided decade. The great bailout also included the car and truck industry. GM and Chrysler got $80 billion, a fifth of what we often remember as money focused on Wall Street. Well, 10 years later, there is still a domestic auto industry, but that outcome was by no means guaranteed. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has been looking at the legacy. Hi, Mitchell.
Good to be here, David.
So start out by taking us back 10 years ago.
So it's November 2008, and things are really bad in the economy. That month, more than 750,000 jobs were lost. The big three automakers, you know, they're huge employers across the upper Midwest. They're in big trouble. I'm going to go to Mark Zandi here. He is chief economist at Moody's.
It felt like economic Armageddon each and every month. Unemployment was going skyward. Stock market was just going into the ground. So it was pretty clear something had to be done.
Now, you know, at that point, GM and Chrysler are careening toward insolvency, and the big three auto CEOs come to Washington asking for a bailout. The auto CEOs fly into Washington on their corporate jets. That look of luxury travel doesn't sit too well with the public in Congress. They get sent packing.
Yeah.
In December, they come back, this time by car. Zandi testifies with them at this hearing, and he says it was really important just to warn Congress, what was at stake?
Liquidation, meaning they would shut factories, everyone would be fired, and these companies would never come back. And that meant all the suppliers, the dealerships, if you let that happen, there would be no U.S. auto industry left.
Now, that's the doomsday scenario that they didn't let happen. Congress and the outgoing Bush administration, then the incoming Obama people, they bring GM and Chrysler under the troubled assets TARP bailout and then gut them through bankruptcy. That was not easy.
No, you know, it wasn't. I mean, literally figuring out how to do it and even whether to do it. I mean, keep in mind, the car companies were in trouble partly because of their own bad business decisions. You know, they had really high labor costs, and for retirees, they're making cars that guzzled gas and no one wanted. University of Chicago economist Austin Goolsbee was on President Obama's Council of Economic Advisors in 2009. And he says the debate in the administration that was raging over the bailout was this.
If we decide to do this, will it even work? Or is it too far gone? Will the government just lose billions of dollars? And can the economy, especially the manufacturing economy, survive if we don't do it?
And I'll tell you, Goolsbee, he actually didn't think it would work. His boss, Larry Summers, at one meeting asked for a straw poll on the bailout. Goolsbee actually voted no. He just didn't think it was feasible. He lost. The bailout went through.
I mean, now 10 years later, people are going to say the verdict is this worked.
Well, yeah. I mean, it might not have been great economic policy to bail out two of the biggest companies in the country. But, you know, now all three domestic automakers, Chrysler now merged with Fiat, are back on their feet, profitable. They've sold a lot of cars since then. They cut labor costs. Doesn't sit well with union auto workers, but they're still employed, hundreds of thousands of them across the Midwest, about as many as before the Great Recession, in fact.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman's the reporter there. Mitchell, thank you.
You're welcome.
We also hear from an auto worker who lived through all of this, marketplace.org/divided decade, if you missed that on the air. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.